Hello and welcome to the Morningscape Podcast. I am Matt Moody, going solo through the Thursday, February 6th NHL slate. As you might be able to tell, I'm recording this slightly after midnight, so the calendar there confused me, but yes, it is technically today's NHL slate. On Thursday, we have 12 games, so very much so looking forward to getting back into the swing of things. DJ is unable to join us tonight. I believe he's at a concert, which, I mean, that's just par for the course for DJ. You know, Wednesday night, gotta drop some goo-goo bucks, go to go see some band that I've never heard of. So he's off doing his thing. And I'm here doing my thing. We have a 12-game slate here on Thursday. This is the final weekend before the NBA All-Star break. So, you know, if you are a fan of the very, very large contests in NHL, you know, obviously they're tougher to win, but the payouts up top are, you know, pretty impressive. This is a good time to hit a hot streak. You know, I'm certainly hoping to do that kind of thing heading into the next week. I believe the NBA is off from next Wednesday until the following Tuesday. So we have, I guess, upcoming, just real quick, our upcoming schedule should be available for a podcast on Tuesday slate, the 11th. And then, I mean, we should be available for the 13th, for the 14th, that Friday. You know, assuming all things go well, even, you know, depending what the slates look like, even a Saturday podcast, a Sunday podcast, I mean, there's no NFL. There's obviously no NBA, so I have a feeling that these podcasts are going to be somewhat useful and, you know, definitely could generate some traffic for, you know, just the podcast in general. So this seems like the perfect time, you know, tell your friends. I promise you that not every single person playing in these contests is listening to the Morningscape Podcast. So do us a solid and, you know, we can continue to give you the goods and, you know, see what happens. Just based on the huge contests we have coming up. So I think the way that I want to attack this slate in particular is to sort of refresh on, you know, where certain teams are. And, you know, I'm just kind of going to go team by team or game by game and just sort of highlight some of the current situations that we have. Obviously, I won't be able to hit everything. You know, there's 24 teams on the slate. There's only so much information that I could dig up. Like, it's just not, you know, not everything is out there. And nor do I think everything is all that useful for, you know, daily fantasy purposes. So I've gone through and I've made like a few notes about every team on the slate here. And then when you meet me on the other side, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, positional analysis and some of the top stacks. But ideally, you know, we don't spend too much time talking about, you know, oh, well, pick this play because he has a 0.2 expectation better than the players around him. Like, I don't really think about NHL Daily Fantasy that way. And, you know, quite frankly, I think if you want that, there's much better projection models and, you know, whatever out there that, you know, would serve that end. So I'm mostly looking for usage trends, injury concerns, you know, lineup changes, that those sort of things. So with that in mind, let's just quickly list off the 12 games here on the slate. We have Anaheim at Montreal. That one is a 5.5 right now, with Montreal being a pretty large favorites. We have Pittsburgh at Tampa Bay. Tampa minus 170 favorites, with the line currently sitting at 6.5. Pretty, you know, pretty fun offensive environment there if you are into that kind of thing. Philly, the largest favorite of the night, taking on the New Jersey Devils. Minus 220 there for Philadelphia. Buffalo hosting Detroit, hilariously, is a minus 200 favorite. I'm not even sure if I would have the Sabres as a minus 200 favorite against an AHL team at this point. But, you know, here we are. The Kings at the Islanders, also a minus 200 favorite for the Isles there. Vegas at Florida, a true pick'em, a 6.5 over-under. All the makings for a, you know, a great DFS sort of environment there. Colorado at Ottawa. Colorado is also a minus 200 favorite here, fresh off of their spanking of the Sabres. Vancouver heads into Minnesota. Minnesota is a slight favorite, 6 over under there. Winnipeg at St. Louis. St. Louis also a minus 200 favorite on the slate. So, you know, a few sizable favorites, but nothing, you know, too outlandish. Carolina at Arizona, a 5.5 over under in the, you know, the sports book, but I am leaning toward the over there. You know, both these teams sort of pop off in terms of expected goals trends. So maybe, you know, maybe I place a wager on that. We'll see sort of how the line moves throughout the day tomorrow. Let's see. Nashville at Calgary, even game there, 6.5, and Edmonton hosting San Jose. Edmonton, a pretty sizable favorite, minus 180, and another 6.5 there. So really not one spot here that stands out on the slate. You know, if you're talking game stacks, to me, I think that Pittsburgh-Tampa game is, you know, ripe for some fireworks. You know, Tampa's been really, really good defensively, so not too bullish on that. And then the Vegas-Florida game, I think that's kind of the second spot where I'm, you know, pretty excited to get pieces of both sides. You know, a lot of fair prices, I think, in that game in particular, so we'll get to them. So let's start at the top of the slate. Just go game by game, team by team, and just sort of list off the few, you know, highlights for each team that I could find. So starting with this Anaheim-Montreal game, Anaheim has really relied on their big five, I call them. You know, earlier this season, they were sort of splitting up the Getzlaff, Fowler, Raquel, Silverberg, Henrique. They were kind of going three on one power play unit, two on the other, you know, in and out of the lineup due to injuries and all that. Now they are going full line one, just Getzlaff, Raquel, Silverberg, and they're also, you know, jamming up that power play with the three of them. So I think that's useful. Montreal's not a team I'm looking to target, but the prices at Anaheim are just very, very cheap right now. And so there is upside there if you want it. Montreal on Wednesday did something interesting. They moved up Kovalchuk, or I guess they didn't really move him up, but they moved Kovalchuk to a line with Max Domi and Nick Cousins. What's really interesting about that is we no longer need to sort of guess on 5-on-5 versus power play stacking. You know, before they were kind of a mess. You know, when Gallagher returned, it just sort of threw everything a bit out of whack. So now we have Kovalchuk, Cousins, and Domi all on the same line and all on the same power play. Very good value there, you know, price-wise, against Anaheim. Obviously, a pretty strong matchup there. And look, you know, Kovalchuk is not going away anytime soon. Last game, in need of a comeback, Kovalchuk played 20 minutes time on ice. You know, Gallagher, 16. Gallagher's never been a guy that Julien really trusts to play, you know, 20, 21, 22 minutes in a night. And, you know, Kovalchuk just seems to have it, you know, whatever it is. You know, I think he's just a really solid, you know, solid DFS player here. When you get his two line mates this cheap with such tight correlation, you could also tack on Shea Weber, who's a good bit more expensive, but still, you know, certainly viable. I think that's one of the more interesting spots on this entire slate myself. So very much so looking forward to seeing, you know, where their ownership tends to end up. I'm not expecting anyone to be very highly owned. You know, my initial read didn't lead me toward one spot in particular that was going to be sort of piled on. Which I guess sort of happens when there's no Boston and no Toronto on a slate, just because, you know, those teams are so predictably piled on, and for good reason. But anyway, moving on to this Pittsburgh-Tampa game, you know, Pittsburgh is pretty much the same since Crosby returned. They're rolling Malkin, Rust, Hornqvist as their second line. They're all on the top power play together, so I'd like to see that. Letang and Crosby being the other two guys on that top unit. Just keep an eye out on Justin Schultz. You know, he's lurking. You know, just the numbers have not been there for him. So I don't really expect them to do, any sort of, you know, flip-flop of the power play units there, but it's worth considering. Just, you know, maybe as he gets healthier, you know, he starts to sort of earn some more ice time and potentially a power play job, a first power play job, but I'm not seeing that as anywhere close to likely going, you know, into this slate, whatever. On Tampa, you know, that star line has remained the same, point Kucherov, Stamkos, so, you know, you do like to see that for stacking purposes and all of that. Just keep an eye on the defensive situation there. It looks like with no Ruda, they're going to slide up Sergachev next to Hedman. You know, I think that's good news for a guy like Sergachev. Every defenseman on Tampa had increased minutes last game just because I think Ruda played like 1 or 2 minutes. So guys you wouldn't normally see cracking the 22 to 23 minute threshold, you know, your Chernaks, your Sergachevs even, you know, they did last game. So if you're game log hunting, just keep that in mind. You know, they played with five defensemen, and obviously Hedman's going to be their horse, and the rest of them will probably fall more into line with their normal seasonal averages. For Buffalo, Dahlin is doubtful here, so that sort of catapults Jeff Skinner onto the top power play. It moves Ristolainen from like the down low passer position on the power play up to the top of the diamond, I guess, with Eichel and Skinner as their flanks. So, you know, I'm a bit hesitant. You know, it's tough. It's been really, really tough to trust the Sabres worth anything as of late. But Eichel is, you know, quite literally unbelievable. And, you know, Risto is cheap enough to the point where he, you know, if he actually... 5,700. I guess that's a little bit much. One of the more macro points of this slate is I think there's a lot of guys who have been priced up. So, you know, we'll talk about some of the players who haven't, you know, a bit later. But, you know, you're going to see that this slate is a very tough slate to put together, like, you know, an excellent team sort of without going the stars and scrubs approach. So, anyway, just keep an eye on that situation for Buffalo. You know, if no Dahlin, there's obviously some value there. I think the main beneficiary of that, coincidentally enough, is Jeff Skinner because the top power play job that opens up for him. But, you know, it's been a tough year. Let's move on. Detroit. So taking on the Sabres, Larkin was skating with Fabry and Helm. Athanasiou is with Bertuzzi, Ablicator. Doesn't matter. Like, if you're playing either Buffalo or Detroit, like, you just probably reconsider, honestly. So moving to this Vegas Florida game, Vegas is doing something extremely gross. They are with no Carlson in the lineup, you know, their numbers have fallen off a slight amount. You know, nothing too crazy offensively, but it also leaves a vacuum of minutes to pick up with no Carlson, obviously no Cody Glass as well, who is out for, you know, the next little while. So Chandler Stephenson is on that top power play unit with Smith and Marchessault. And Ryan Reeves is in front of the net for that unit. And then the other side you have Pacioretty, Stone, Tuck, and I believe Cody Eakin, with Theodore kind of going between those two units like he always does. But it's just weird. Like, I don't want to see Ryan Reeves playing 17 minutes for a team for a team that's a part of this sort of game stack that I like. I'm just probably leaning toward the Pacioretty side myself. It's a little bit unfortunate that he got priced back up. He got a depressed price of 6,100 on Tuesday slate going against Tampa, and then, you know, immediately they leave Tampa and he's back up at 7,000. So it's a tough sell, but I think there is value in the Vegas side, especially if you're stacking. Marchessault comes in below 6,000, as does Riley Smith, who's at 5,400. So it's not a terrible idea to, you know, mini stack like that. I think that's a pretty reasonable stack, but I might be staying away from Pacioretty myself here, just given how many wings that I think are actual, like, extreme values. So going to the Florida side here, It sounds like Barkov is, you know, highly questionable. They're being very coy about his situation, so we'll see. You know, I have this about as a 50-50, literally. If Barkov misses, though, they haven't really used the top line as their top line. You know, it's only been two games, so it is what it is. But, you know, Barkov, before his injury, was playing 22, 19, you know, just, like, tons of minutes. You know, maybe not quite the 24 that we were seeing in years past, but, you know, a good amount of minutes. And Dadonov and Huberto have simply not sort of kept that pace up. Actually, maybe the biggest beneficiary, you know, on Monday and Tuesday was Mike Hoffman, who played 20 minutes, 17 minutes, and 18 minutes, all coming up from his seasonal average of about 16 minutes. It's very minor, but Hoffman is also 4,600. He's been shooting the puck a lot lately, 13 shots in his last three games, even more shot attempts per game, you know, just one of the best shooters in the league at 4,600 in a game stack up-tempo environment. I think that's a very, very strong play there myself. So, you know, if Barkov plays, it's more likely that Hoffman, you know, drops down to that 15 to 16 minute range. But every extra bit of value, I think, is a good way to go here. So going to LA at the Islanders, Dustin Brown has worked his way back onto that top line in place of Tyler Toffoli. But he's not on the top power play. Toffoli's kept that power play job. He's been pretty effective. Still a reasonable price there on Toffoli, playing with Jeff Carter and Grunstrom. And just a reminder that Drew Doughty is back in the lineup. So none of that Alec Martinez or Sean Walker sort of like mega value hype that I think was just a week ago where we were sort of talking about that. But on the Islanders side, I was just sort of digging through some numbers. I'm like, man, like the Islanders have been pretty good lately. You know, like expected goals wise. And then I see, you know, I think Barzal, Lee, and Eberle are each averaging 11 fantasy points on DraftKings per game in their last 10 games. And I'm like, wow, well, they must be shooting the lights out. But that's really not been the case. I think each one of those line mates has at least 35 shots on goal in the last 10 games. And if I recall correctly, I think only one of them had a shooting percentage above 10%. Yeah, so, I mean, Anders Lee has been very, very good. Matt Barzal has been lighting the world on fire with only two goals, and that's on 35 shots in his last 10 games. So, to me, this Islanders stack really stands out. I can't believe I'm saying that. You know, some of the underlying numbers suggest LA's been, you know, fine defensively. But, like, here's the thing. Like, they've been unable to stop a puck all season. They just moved out Jack Campbell. They just moved out, you know, Kyle Clifford. Like, the team clearly just mailed it in for the year. And when I can get a combined stack, like New York one for about 16,000, and I can tack on Devon Toews, their power play defenseman, for 3,700, who, by the way, is, like, you know, been very, very strong lately as well. I'm going to do that. So I think that, you know, for 20,000-ish, this New York Ranger or this New York Islander power play one stack is among the top stacks here. So I'm interested to see what sort of hype they get around the industry, because their point production has not been great, but their shot numbers have been through the roof. And, you know, that's sort of inflating their fantasy totals. So, you know, if that continues and they run into some, you know, puck luck, like, they could have a legitimate slate-breaking upside win here. So, all right, going over to New Jersey, Philly. Nico Hischier and Sammy Vatanen will be out for New Jersey. Subban should draw back in, but I think what's, you know, with no Hischier, this Blake Coleman fella, like, you know, the guy who was kind of a joke last year, and this year, just, like, still kind of a joke. You know, I certainly didn't buy it. He's been just unbelievable. You know, and he worked his way into a power play one job with no Hischier, and he capitalized on it with two assists there against the Canadiens last game. So I would imagine that stays. He's been shooting a ton. Yes, he's 5,600. Yes, the matchup with Philly isn't great, but he's playing like a bona fide, you know, let's call him earlier in the season, Max Pacioretty, where it was just like you could almost bank on him hitting the shot bonus. You know, you could bank on him playing 20, 22 minutes with pretty solid line mates. You know, Gusev and Zajac won't light the world on fire, but they've been a pretty solid line. Gusev has a lot of offensive talent. And, you know, I think there's a good amount of upside there for a relatively deflated price, kind of just given the players that are around his range. I like Coleman a lot. I'm not sure if he sort of cracks like the, you know, I'm making three lineups. Does he make one of them? Maybe not. But if you're mass multi-entering, you know, he certainly has some nice upside here. So on the Philly side of this game, not much to change. It's Drew, Konechny, JVR together on the first line and the first power play. And then the second line is Couturier, Voracek, and Farabee. Keep an eye on the status of Gostisbehere. He could return to the lineup and sort of shake up the power plays, but they really seem to just not like Gostisbehere there. Would not be surprised if he was out of Philly by year end. So, you know, stacking against New Jersey, probably good. Do I have a suggestion on which line you should stack? I do not. maybe bug me tomorrow in the Discord if you want to hear that, but I really don't know at this point. They're both fine. They're both pretty good. I just don't know which way I'll lean just yet. Colorado against Ottawa. Colorado broke the last slate against the Sabres. That line of Kadri, Burakovsky, and Valnichushkin was the line that went off. I would expect Kadri to be on the top power play and Burakovsky and Nichushkin to be a second power play. So, you know the top line's the top line. Spend for them if you want. On the Ottawa side, one of the best values of the slate that I just sort of stumbled across because I just assumed they had fixed his price at this point, Drake Batherson. He is line two, power play one, minimum salary. And in each of the last five games, he's played at least 15 minutes time on ice. And he's got a point, he's got a point per game over that frame as well. So he's getting top power play looks. He's getting a solid amount of ice time. Do I want to attack this Colorado team? Not necessarily, but like, am I going to sort of like shoo him away at minimum salary because I'm afraid of a matchup? Like, all you need is a dinky power play assist and, you know, three shots on goal to feel really, really good about that play. If he scores, you know, by the way, he's like the AHL's leading point scorer this year. You know, and he's a pretty solid shooter as well. So if he sort of picks up the shots and, you know, continues the run of, you know, points, like, why not? You know, he's minimum salary for top power play job. Like, this seems like a great way to sort of fit in some of these super studs here. And rather than sort of, you know, take a little bit of variance in one or multiple roster spots, why not just take, you know, a good amount of variance, but a pretty solid projection in one roster spot and just sort of spend to the roof at the other positions. So really like Batherson here. If you're looking to stack that for whatever reason, Tyler Ennis is with them at 5-on-5 and the power play. He's 3,600, so another cheap option there, been pretty solid. And Mike Riley was playing on the top power play instead of Chabot. I don't know how long that lasts, to be honest, but Riley's been pretty solid. So he's a cheap player as well. Really cheap three-man stack if you need it. So going to some of these Western Conference games, the slate is nice. It actually ends, I think, relatively early for a 12-game slate. Last game, puck drop is at 9:30, so I guess not perfect, but better than those LA games that puck drop at 10:30, I guess. So getting back to it, St. Louis, really same old, same old. They've been pretty solid all year, but Robert Thomas slid up to the top line now, so it's Shen, Schwartz, and Robert Thomas. No changes to the power play units or anything like that, so not a ton of interest in this game. Winnipeg, same deal. St. Louis has been very good defensively all year, so just not thrilled about that situation. In Nashville, Calgary, A couple interesting notes. Nashville flipped Josi onto the Forsberg tourist power play unit. So rather than Arvidsson, Granlund, Johansson, Josi, and Yarncrow, whoever, Yossi's actually kind of onto that Forsberg tourist power play. So with Forsberg and tourists playing together at 5-5 with Arvidsson here, Forsberg is obviously a good play. Tourist is a nice cheap value. And then Josi is just kind of one of those, boss type defense players who, if you can afford them, absolutely solid play. But 7,700, certainly not a priority, but worth noting, especially if you want to stack up Forsberg. On the Calgary side, Mark Giordano is doubtful here. This is a pretty big injury situation, if you ask me. Should Giordano miss, my assumption is that Rasmus Anderson will take over the top power play job for Calgary. They love him. He was already playing in the top four and on the second power play unit. In some time, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, when Giordano missed, Anderson was the guy sort of picking up that top power play job. So 2,700 on Rasmus Anderson. He's a player I absolutely love from a prospect profiling standpoint. he hasn't been all that great this year, just sort of averaging about 3 shots plus blocks per game in that time span. So keep an eye on the status of Giordano, but I imagine that if he's out, Anderson is a lock button for me, just because it's not that often we get, good players on top power play units, probably going to play 20 to 22 minutes for that sort of price. So very interesting news situation there. In Carolina, with Jordan Martinuk being out for this game and Nino looking doubtful, it kind of seems like Justin Williams might be able to slide into a top six role. When you combine that with his power play one job right now, he seems like a pretty fair play. 4,100 on him isn't the best price, but if he gets that sort of bump up in role, I could see that being certainly useful here. And another interesting power play defenseman here, with Ekman Larson likely out for Arizona, Jordan Osterley played 25 minutes last game. Got the power play one job alongside the Hall, Dvorak, Garland, Kessel power play unit. And yeah, I mean, he is 2,600 here. So there's a couple guys who, it might feel gross to sort of play two relative no names, but boy, that lets you do some really great stuff at forward. So just two injury situations there with OEL and Giordano that could sort of shape our decision-making here. And then the last game of the night, San Jose at Edmonton. San Jose is just a mess. Like, it's really tough to suggest just about anything here. But noteworthy that we have Joe Thornton, line one, power play one, just like flashback. He's skating with LeBanc and Timo at 5-on-5. LeBanc on the power play as well. So LeBanc is solid value, but here's a fun fact. Edmonton's actually playing very well lately. Defensively, they've tightened things up, it appears. And offensively, they've been pretty strong as well. Last game against Arizona, notwithstanding, they got shut out and they looked lifeless most of that game. So, probably just a blip there. But if we do see any sort of changes, it could come to the benefit of Kyler Yamamoto. He's been very strong. He's not much of a shooter, which is sort of a bad thing for daily fantasy purposes. But he did see a lot of time with McDavid last game. I don't imagine they break up the Yamamoto, RNH, and Draisaitl line. But they could. So just keep an eye on that situation. So there's the run-through of all 12 games. Just sort of like the news, notes, and sort of first thoughts about them. I think because we've already hit the 30-minute mark, I'm going to just sort of list some of my favorite stacks here and then do a couple guaranteed goals. I think probably the best values I've already touched on, at least to some extent, just due to the injury concerns or elsewise. If you want something like that, like just rewind and just sort of listen for the individual players I called out. I think those guys are sort of, you know, the ones who caught my attention looking through the ranks here. So looking at the top stacks here, I tend to base these off of my top teams and just sort of looking at some Vegas odds and also some of the expected goals trends that we have in front of us. I think Montreal is in a really nice spot here. I would not be surprised to see their over-under tick up to a 6 by puck drop, and they're among the largest favorites. They have the best expected goals matchup. And I already mentioned that line for them that is together on the top power play. It's very, very cheap. It's Max Domi, Ilya Kovalchuk, and Nick Cousins. Each of those players, I think, are combined, let's see, 4,700 for Domi. Kovalchuk comes in at 4,800 and Cousins at 2,900. So, yeah, I mean, that's like a supreme value stack there too. But I think that honestly has a good amount of upside. You know, I love Kovalchuk's game. I've talked about it multiple times now, but Domi's been very good this year as well. And if he's getting anywhere close to, you know, 19 minutes like he picked up in last game, I'm all about it. So hoping that the, you know, Kovalchuk magic sort of continues here. But to me, it's a great matchup. Everything points toward that line being a great way to fit in a, you know, superior stack, but also pick up some upside as well. So I think the other spot that I'm looking to is that Islanders stack that I mentioned before. Barzal, Lee, Eberle. You know, if you're trying to jam those two together, I think you could honestly spend way up at defense too. So, you know, that could be a fun little GPP stack. Apologies if there's any background noise. My cat somehow figured out how to get into a giant suitcase, but not how to get out of it. So after minutes of struggling, just tipped over the entire thing and stomped it on out like nothing happened. Gotta love those four-legged friends. So getting back to it, that Islanders stack, you could also tack on Devontae's for, you know, additional value there as well. But that's pretty nice if you ask me. And then let's tack on my top expensive stack on the night. This is actually, I think, a bit more interesting than, you know, could be otherwise, just because of the fact that so many of, like, the bonafide studs are just not on this slate. But I'm going to go with the first line in Tampa, Point, Kucherov, Stamkos. You know, I'm very clearly of the team that Point is a secondary piece there. I think if you get Stamkos and Kucherov, you know, outside of those, you know, upper 5% of outcomes where that line combines for four goals, you're capturing a lot of the upside Tampa has to offer in just Kucherov and Stamkos, just because Point does not shoot all that often, and he's not a featured puck toucher on the power play. You know, goals tend to go Kucherov to Stamkos or Stamkos to Kucherov, which with one of the other three guys, usually Hedman, getting like a secondary assist. But anyway, over the past 10 games, Kucherov and Stamkos are both in the top 10 on the slate in expected fantasy points, and they are also in the top 7 in actual fantasy points. So clearly, they're just unbelievable. You know, I was kind of surprised to see them as installed as, what, minus 170 favorites here. But to me, they are by far the best team in the league. The over-under on this game is massive. So it's just, I mean, this is just a smash spot if I've ever seen one. And with a lot of value on this slate and hopefully a lot of depressed ownership just because it's got to go somewhere, basically, I'm hoping that people sort of, you know, are off of the Tampa train and I can ride that one to victory. I guess I wanted to touch quickly on something I brought up earlier about how this slate just seems very priced up in comparison to some other ones. So just kind of expanding on that real quick. We're seeing at center the similar trend emerging where we're not really seeing 8,000 or the low 8K range as sort of like the ceiling for prices. So like McKinnon, Eichel, McDavid, Draisaitl, they're all 8.2 or above, with McKinnon at 8,500. And same goes for wing, where we have Rantanen, Stamkos, and Kucherov at 8,000 or higher. Like Taylor Hall is 7,900. I love Taylor Hall, but he is not a 7,900 daily fantasy player, especially not, you know, against Carolina, who's like a solid team. You know, the Colorado top line is a combined $24,000 on this slate. It's just kind of silly. You know, so I am very happy looking to sort of these mini stacks or these more, honestly, what I consider to be better values at the mid-tier, just because a lot of players are just priced through the roof. Like Kyle Connor, $6,800 player. Sam Reinhart, $6,900. Like, what's going on here? Like, Brendan Gallagher came back, played 17 minutes. He played 14 minutes and then 18 minutes and then 17 minutes in three pretty easy matchups. Has like an average of 6 fantasy points per game to show for it. And he's 7,400 here. Like, what are we doing, people? To me, it's just sort of play the good plays that are at good prices, because there's a lot of them, but there's also a lot of plays that, you know, look fine on paper, just given their matchup, where if you kind of take a step back and go, all right, how does he compare to the other options in this price range? You know, to me, it's a no-brainer that Max Pacioretty for $100 more than Reinhart and Connor, or, you know, $400 less than Gallagher, is a straight up better play. Like, all the dude does is shoot the puck. The goals have not quite been there lately, but I think this is a good spot for that to change. And, you know, if you can't afford that, I kind of talked about how 7,000 may be a little high for a Vegas guy who the Vegas, you know, they've just struggled to score kind of ever since Carlson went down. They're sort of puttering along. Let's look at Marchessault for 5,900. You know, one of the secondary, like, elite shooters in the league. So, you know, right there, I think that price is just sort of, like, laugh out loud, you know, bad or good, depending on how you look at things. If Barkov's back, Huberto dropped below 6,000 here. Why? You know, I don't know. He was 7,200, like, a week ago. If Barkov's back, you know, this game is a 6.5 over-under. That's a great price. You know, it's, to me, it's just that simple. Like, you take high upside guys at the lower end of their prices. Andrei Svechnikov, 5,600, probably skating with Aho here. Sure, like, go for it. You know, so really, I think my advice here is just be very careful on where you are allocating your dollars on this slate. I think there's a lot of traps, honestly. You know, I think playing the good plays is always the best option, but be sure to play the good plays while being price sensitive, because that's as much of the game as anything. So, yeah, I guess I got to do guaranteed goals now, too, that we are almost done with this podcast. So I'm going to make things easy. I'm going to go with Mike Hoffman at 4,600. I just, you know, I'm just jamming this dude in, especially if Barkov is out. Like, I think it is, like, legitimately a thing that without Barkov, they're not nearly as comfortable using, like, Dennis Malgin or whoever they want to make their top line center. Like, it was Trocheck, but he sort of bounced around the lineup last game. Actually, excuse me. It was Trocheck, I think, 2 games ago, but then it was Malgin last game with Trocheck getting the power play nod. So, basically, they're using the Dadonov-Huberto line as a third line without Barkov. So Hoffman is the direct beneficiary of that. He's their shooter on the power play. He's got a nasty shot. He's priced way down. I think that's just, you know, a really easy guaranteed goal for me there. And then I'm going to look at the center position. You know, I could go with someone like Matt Barzal, who I really did like. You know, I have nothing against him, obviously, because I think he's a great play. But I'm going to go a little off the reservation and go with a dude who just, he always seems to burn me when I want to jump on him, because it's sort of like playing whack-a-mole between Giroux and Couturier. But I'm going to go with Sean Couturier here. Joel Farabee is very cheap, his line mate and also his power play mate, $3,700 for Farabee. He's got a ton of talent coming off of two outstanding games himself. And then Voracek is the other guy there who's priced way down for his talent and, you know, just overall, I think, reliability from a daily fantasy standpoint. So I really like Couturier here. You know, maybe that's sort of my answer if you're looking to pick a stack between Giroux, Konechny, and JVR versus Couturier, Farabee, and Voracek. But definitely check back in on that tomorrow because I might get bored at work and do some more digging there. So my two guaranteed goals, I'm sure I've said these two names at some point a lot this season, Hoffman and Couturier. It's a giant slate. Best advice, play whoever you want to play. Just make sure you're slightly correlated. Make sure you have a bunch of shooters. And make sure you are following us on Twitter at MorningskatePod. Hopefully one of us will go through and sort of retweet any relevant news, especially in relation to those injury, you know, on defense, especially that I noticed earlier. You know, if we do get two bona fide studs, you know, defensively for 20, whatever, 26, 2700, maybe it does sort of make these higher end plays like Colorado 1 or, you know, guys like that sort of more reasonable to play. So still a lot to be learned here, I think, for this slate. So hopefully you learned something. Hopefully you enjoyed this. You know, I know it's not the best listening to one person drone on for 40 minutes, but you made it. Congratulations. And hopefully you learned something. And as always, feel free to follow me on Twitter. I am Matt Udy, so at Fake Moods on Twitter. And join our Discord if you're interested. You can DM me or you can DM us at MorningskatePod on Twitter to get you in there. I think we have, let's see. Actually, I looked at this the other day, but I forget how many we have now. Yeah, we have 96 members now in our Discord. So almost reached the century mark. Pretty cool. Thank you to everyone who comes in, hangs out, chats, makes it worthwhile for us because it is a lot of fun. And I've gotten this question a couple times in, you know, the Discord or whatever. So if you're not that active in there and you've been listening and paying attention, you might know that, you know, having some family issues. My mom was diagnosed with lymphoma. So just wanted to give a quick update there. You know, things, first chemo went okay. You know, she's having hopefully what are after effects of chemo and not anything to do with cancer related, like double vision is sort of like her thing right now. So fingers crossed for the best, but really appreciate everyone who's reached out privately and, you know, in the Discord, just to sort of, you know, wish us luck. It's very much appreciated. So anyway, just wanted to pass that along. You know, she'll continue to fight. Next week is the next round of chemo, but Mama Moods is going to be just fine. So I appreciate you all, and yeah, let's end the show right there. So that'll do it for this version of the MorningskatePod podcast. From Doug, from DJ, and from myself, have a good slate, everybody, and we will see ya.